That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, good evening and welcome to this edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show.
I'm Michael. Be careful, Shaw. Michael's fired up tonight. Be careful. Be ready. Be ready.
That's Roy Avila, you know, our fireman on duty here tonight. You know, before we get started, I'm going to share with you, Roy, the trip that seven or eight of us made up to Tuolumne County. Now, Tuolumne County is in the Sierra Nevadas. It's actually the home to a large portion of the Yosemite National Park. Fairly lightly populated, beautiful county, as you can imagine. And we spoke to, over 300 people Friday night and spoke at a town hall center meeting on Saturday. And boy, it did open some people's eyes. But you know what was curious is the public-private partners were there in the audience, and you know, as the night wore on, it became very evident who they were. And our goal, of course, was to expose the concept of public-private partnership and how it is using various techniques, including our subject tonight, which will be regionalism, to indoctrinate the people and steal their liberty and create this little insider kingdom like what we have here in Santa Cruz, so that all the economics as well as the public policy is controlled by an inside elite group.
And who were some of those people in the inside group there?
Well, you know, you find the pattern between some people in the Chamber of Commerce, some people in the local banking field, and other businessmen, the large landowners, and all to the expense of the average landowner, average homeowner, and average citizen.
Did any of those people stand up and challenge anything you were talking about?
Never. But you catch the drift of who's who, in the socializing that happens after the talk. But the presentations that we've developed here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, the speakers bureau that we have, it's really unassailable. We look forward so much, including on this radio show, to hearing the defenders of sustainable development argue their case, and we simply haven't been able to find anybody to do that.
888-245-4237, just in case you wanted the number.
Well, and we'll ask that you hold your calls here for the first segments of our show so that our guest can raise the issues that will be the topic of discussion tonight. Our guest is Charlotte Isabeat. She's been our guest before. She's an education expert, and she is the consummate whistleblower. She served as senior policy advisor in the Office of Educational Research, the U.S. Department of Education, during the first Reagan administration. And there she blew the whistle on a major technology initiative which will control curriculum in American classrooms. Charlotte is a speaker and a writer, best known or well known for her 1985 booklet, Back to Basics, Reform or OBE, the Skinnerian Institutional Curriculum, and her 1989 pamphlet, Soviets in the Classroom, America's Latest Education Fad, which covered the details of the U.S.-Soviet and Carnegie-Soviet education agreements, which remain in effect to this day. She is the author of the incredible book, The Dumbing Down, The Deliberate Dumbing Down, she's got two websites, thedeliberatedumbingdown.com and americandeception.com. We'll be right back at Freedom 21. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, and I'm going to say with great respect and admiration, hello to an incredible researcher, Charlotte Isabeat.
Hello, Michael. It's very good, very nice to be on. Good to be on with you, as usual. And I've had a long day. I've had a dog that just had surgery for a neurological, really bad disc in the spine, a little doxy. And I've got a husband who's sick. What else have I got going on today? I don't know, but anyway, Actually, this is the most pleasant thing I've done all day.
Well, I'm glad for that, and it's what I've looked forward to doing all day.
Yeah.
So we're hitting our apex right at the right time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure your husband how would I say about men generally when they're sick? A bigger complainer than your dog.
Much, yes. In fact, the vet, I won't tell the whole story on my husband on that because that wouldn't be fair, but the vet made the very good point about dachshunds, that they are much more rugged and have much more courage than any man he'd ever known. And after the surgery today, he said, "I don't know how your little one was even walking. This is such an enormous disc that was causing all this horrible pain." I'll tell you something, that little doggie cost quite a lot of money today.
Well, that can be the case, too.
But you love them. I mean, really, you get right down to it. They're a wonderful support in these times of weird behavior by the two-leggeds.
Well, the two-leggeds who have the power and are exercising a control...
The two-leggeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's my dog is a tremendous comfort.
Well, of course, the effort is on in Texas and in Congress to register all livestock.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be too far down the stream before they'll want to register all pets.
Well, that's the international system. And I wanted to mention something. You would not have known this, but the little 1985 booklet that I wrote, Back to Basics Reform or Skinnerian International Curriculum. That's what it was. I saw it in 85. It was the Reagan administration, really. A lot of people don't want to recognize the fact that that was a very controversial administration as far as education was concerned. And what you were just talking about, the public-private partnerships,
mm-hmm.
That started under President Reagan's White House, and I was the liaison from the U.S. Department of Ed.
Hold that thought till we come right back, and we'll finish up.
Righto.
We'll be right back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. I'm Michael Shaw with Roy Avila, and our special guest tonight, Charlotte Iserbeet. And Charlotte is beginning to describe for us her experiences in the Reagan White House working in the Education Department. Proceed, please.
Well, yes. I mean, my boss, the Assistant Secretary in the Office of Educational Research and Improvement, assigned me as a liaison from the department to the White House. Every department, you know, agriculture everywhere had a liaison for public-private partnerships. And I remember going over to the White House, and I asked one of the a lovely lady over there, a political appointee from California, there are people who would know her if I mentioned her name. I just said, what's going on here? I mean, I'm not a highly educated person, but isn't a public-private partnership, isn't that corporate fascism?
And well, now that's what we should all be asking when we see that in our communities, and it's in every community, is it not?
It is, but to think that it started then, and I've got a big file on it. You know, I'm putting everything up now. It's not, everything isn't up because I have to do a lot of work on this website, but my son has scanned in many, many documents right now that I've got to work on doing a little overview for each one so people will know what they're going into. But that's certainly one document I'm going to put in there because it lists all the different people involved in the public-private partnership and in promoting it, and it's the most extraordinary list of people you have ever seen. I mean, it just about covers everything you ever heard of. It covers the churches. It covers the Chamber of Commerce. It covers the minority groups. I mean, on and on and on and on. And that was the beginning, truly, of the ripping apart of our form of government and our economic system.
Well, and with it goes our system of justice. Because,
yes, exactly. And so sustainable development, which is what all of you are so deeply into now, is the latest label for pure communism, basically.
Pure communism, and you saw the true beginnings of what we see now in the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
That's got to be very disheartening for many people who just fell in love with his speech-making ability.
It's a tragedy. It's, and for, you know, me too. I mean, gosh, I was a great, I wouldn't have gotten in there if I hadn't been an ardent supporter of Reagan. And so I got in there, and then I found out, and I really, shame on me, before I went in, the Southern California Yurok people warned me with their little book, Here's the Rest of Him, and they warned me about him, and I got, this is, you see, we're all the same. I mean, I'm no different from anybody else in the audience. These people who don't want to believe us, I didn't want to believe either. And I wouldn't read that book. I looked at the beginning of it, and it made me mad because they were beating up on my favorite person. And so I didn't read it. I read a little bit. I turned it, put it away. And then I went down and I lived it out. I learned exactly, I got burned badly and I got fired because I leaked a document. But I knew I was going to get fired, right? I mean, I figured I would. I mean, it was a very important, vital contract to the National Education Association. How about that? Reagan funding the NEA, huh?
Well, which he campaigned to eliminate.
Yeah, and the department he campaigned to eliminate. But and all the conservatives always talking about they beat up on the NEA. That's their straw man, right? They don't beat up on the U.S. Department of Ed, do they? They beat up on the NEA, and I think that a lot of them would be very surprised to find out that the U.S. Department of Ed, which is the major culprit, funds the National Education Association. And, you know, people have got to wake up and figure this out. The U.S. Department of Ed is what has to go. I can't stand the NEA, and for obvious reasons, your listeners probably can't either, and there are very good reasons not to, but if people only understood that the NEA is not the major problem. And on another point here, Michael, people have got to understand that at the top, the National Education Association strongly supports school choice, mainly charter schools.
Well, that's just an extension of central control over education,
and that's
why we're seeing proposals for engaging federal dollars into the private school curriculum.
That's right, and they want to NEA touch. They've got a lot of quotes on that. They say the question is not to OBE or to OBE or whatever. The basic question is public funding of private education. And that is a direct quote from a very close associate of William Spades, who was Mr. Outcomes-Based Education. That is the question. And if the conservatives out there who are pushing for school choice don't wake up soon, the whole private school sector is going to be taken over by the federal government.
Well, you take the king's shilling, you do the king's work.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
This is way beyond, in my mind, a call for conservatives. I've never characterized myself as one, and yet I'm concerned about the education of my children and my neighbors' children and the children all across this country. And as long as the federal government is pushing down this phony curriculum into the minds and the spirits of our children, well, we face a very dark destiny.
We do. But I know that I'm not meant to be dealing with education tonight. That's fine by me. I deal with it a lot. We're meant to be dealing with regionalism.
Before you go on, yeah. Charlotte, this is Roy Avila.
Okay, Roy?
You said something earlier that struck me. You know, you said that you were just like everyone else. But you are different because there are many people who attain high positions such as the one you had who don't tell the truth, who continue to perpetuate the policies.
Right.
And what was it that in your gut made you say, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore?
Well, I've always been sort of an individualist. When I see that something is not fair and it's not just and it's right, and that I took an oath when I went to work in the Department of Education to support the Constitution, what a joke, huh? I mean, really, that in itself is an oxymoron, sort of, huh? And I was a moron, I guess. But I realized when I saw the grants and contracts going all over the world and to the NEA and to all these wretched organizations that the goal of which is to destroy our country and our children's morals and values, you know, I thought, I've got to, this got to stop. And especially when I saw it on the computers, when the computer software was being developed to go out across the country into every state. And I, all of a sudden I realized, I said, I took an oath to support the Constitution. This is totally unconstitutional. The building that I'm working in is totally unconstitutional, so I'm going to do this.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it just had to be done. And I wasn't the only one, you know. There were a few of us. There should have been more. There was one guy far better than I would say far more to be honored than myself, the head of the National Institute of Education, which was the real, that's the Marxist factory part of the department. And he was a former headmaster of the Cathedral School for Girls in Washington, D.C. Wonderful man, Edward Curran. And he saw what was going on, and I gave him a lot of stuff that I pulled out, and he was looking at things too, like Schooling for a Global Age and all these horrible books being written to determine the agenda for education in this century, and just horrible things. They were totally un-American, total communism. And Ed recommended that his office, which was the most important office in the department, because that's where all the funding of the rotten programs all over the world into our universities, into our schools, came from. He recommended that his own office be abolished. And he sent the letter through to President Reagan, and Reagan was out of the country at the moment, and one of his staff, Dick Dorman, I think one of them, not sure, sent that letter back to the U.S. Secretary of Education, T.H. Bell, who was a long-time change agent and should never have been made Secretary of Education to get rid of the department because he supported the department. But anyway, the letter went back to him, and he fired this wonderful educator, Edward Curran. He fired him, and President Reagan let it stand. Instead of firing T.H. Bell, putting Edward Curran in as Secretary of Education, who would have probably abolished the department, made sure it was abolished, right? A lot of people make excuses for President Reagan on this score. I make none. Plus the fact that I wrote him a letter. It's on my website, my letter. I wrote him a letter, 4 pages, telling him exactly what was going on in the department, and I know he got the letter, because John Loftin, who's a friend of mine, a journalist, one day he called the White House, and I was with John, and he talked to Reagan's secretary. And she said, oh, yes, yes, he's got her her letter on his desk, and he's marked it all up in the margins, and he's sending it on to Ed Meese.
Wow.
And so I never got an answer to that letter, and I did make a special trip down to Washington to see, to visit Ed Meese's office. I knew I wouldn't get to see him, but I did see Ken Cribb, his assistant, in regard to it. And I said, why am I not getting an answer to this? This is terribly important. And he just patted me on the shoulder, and he said, well, Charlotte, aren't you happy just to know the president read your letter? And I said, no, I'm not. I'm not at all happy about it. Personally, I'm very unhappy to know that he read my letter, and he has not responded.
Certainly.
But, of course, he couldn't respond. He couldn't even acknowledge it, because if I had an acknowledgement, I could go out there, like right now, right, on the radio, and say, I knew for a fact, I have proof. Right, that that President Reagan knew very well what was going on in the U.S. Department of Education, that we had agreements with all sorts of foreign countries, especially working with the Soviets. And, you know, and then, of course, President Reagan signed the agreement with Gorbachev to merge the two education systems.
Well,
but this works well with your sustainable development subject, because what we are implementing in this country in every single way is communism.
I always argue it's worse than communism. It's way beyond communism.
Well, yeah, it is,
so
because of technology.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
The technology will allow all human beings to be controlled, managed.
That's right.
And made into drones.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, it's interesting we're talking about Reagan, because certainly in our topic tonight on regionalism, Reagan's name will appear again, because he was the man who regionalized California before any other spots in the country really were regionalized, at least to the degree that they were, while he was governor.
That's right.
And it takes me to a quote that Joan Peros, geopolitical journalist and director at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, uses in many talks she gives. And that quote is this, from Isaiah, 2,700 years ago. I have removed the boundaries of the people and have robbed their treasuries. So I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. My hand has found like a nest of the riches of the people, and as one gathers the eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth. There is no one who has moved his wing nor opened his mouth even with a peep. Well, that is the globalist movement of today. That's what they're counting on. That's what they're trying to do. That's why they silence people like us in our effort to spread the word. But the reality is that people are moving their wings and people are opening their mouth, and the word is spreading, and that's the threat to those who attempt to gather all our riches and take our liberty and centralize it into a global political economic authority that is called the New World Order.
Right.
Well, let's talk about regionalism, and why is it that a regional government is a threat to liberty beyond what Isaiah had to say so long ago?
Well, I think regionalism, basically, it's redistribution of wealth, dropping borders between towns, counties, states, countries, centralizing power, and losing local control. And you're losing your elective officials. They're putting in appointed task forces, councils. Council is a Soviet. Look in the dictionary for that. And I know it's communism because of a wonderful article that I picked up in 1975 by Morris Zeitlin, a communist. It was in the Communist Daily World, and it was entitled Planning is Socialism's Trademark. And that is in my Deliberate Dumbing Down book on page 134. But basically what he says is he goes into a lot of detail about metropolitan planning and socialism, and then he talks about how the United States is not moving fast enough towards regionalism. This was back in 74, right? And that it worked so well in the Soviet Union. I mean, if people could only understand that regionalism is communism. There's absolutely no other way of looking at it. Here you've got a communist writer saying it, And there's another quote, I think, Mike, that's very important, and that is, it goes way back to 1798, and it's in the Scottish scholar John Robison. He wrote the book Proofs of a Conspiracy. Actually, I have an original copy of that in the leather, you know, with the S's look like F's and all. And on page 100, they're talking about What Robison went out, well, Robison was a Scottish Rite Mason. He went to France to study the great Grand Orient Masonry. And he was absolutely appalled. He was a Mason himself, but he was appalled at what was going on in France. And of course this was, around the time, a little bit after the revolution. But he said, he discusses the Illuminati instruction, the Masonic instruction of the children of royalty. It's very interesting on page 100. I'm just going to get this quote because it sounds like Isaiah, too. It shows how this plan has been on the drawing board for a long, long time. And it says, quote, the baleful effects of general superstition and even of any peculiar religious prepossession are now strongly inculcated. You see, this is in the students of royalty. They're very religious and patriotic and all that. And the discernment of pupils in these matters is learned, in other words, they're teaching the pupils, by questions. Doesn't it sound like critical thinking? Mm-hmm. Which are given them from time to time to discuss. These are managed with delicacy and circumspection, that the timid may not be alarmed. In like manner, the political doctrines of the order are inculcated with the utmost caution. After the mind of the pupil has been warmed by the pictures of universal happiness, and convinced that it is a possible thing to unite all the inhabitants of the earth in one great society, an effort has been made out in some measure to the satisfaction of the pupil that a great addition of happiness would be gained by the abolition of national distinctions and animosities. There may frequently be no hard task to make him, the student, think that patriotism is a narrow-minded, monopolizing sentiment and even incompatible with the more enlarged views of the order, namely the uniting of the whole human race into one great and happy society, end quote. That's 1798. That's a very important quote. That book was given, Robeson gave it to George Washington, and I understand that after Washington read it, he got out of the Masons.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, it is interesting. And we've got to look at this. This is not something that just happened under Clinton or Reagan or Nixon or Woodrow Wilson. This has been in the works for many, many years. And it's always, the goal has always been the same, totalitarian control, destruction of religion, destruction of sovereignty, destruction of patriotism, destruction of morality, and creation of enormous power, prestige, influence for certain people.
Wow. And to do that, human beings need to be treated as human resources.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's the building of an elite. Would you surmise, or do you know, is that was that attitude amongst the offspring of royalty continued up through and into the 20th century?
Well, I think that what happened is that, you know, you've seen in Europe, they've done everything possible to destroy religion. And what he was talking about was the efforts of the order, the teachers, right, the Illuminati teachers, to destroy any beliefs that the children of royalty had. See, those children had a classical education, and they believed in God. They believed in, you know, in the supremacy of God. And so they had to be brainwashed. They had to get rid of that belief. They were patriotic. They believed in their country. And so what Robeson was talking about was what he saw when he went to France was how the Illuminati, the teachers, the Masonic teachers, their instructions on how to brainwash the children of the royalty. And I mean, I could take that quote and put it right next to a global education book in 2005. So we're not looking at, you know, there's nothing different going on. But coming up to where we are right now, Michael, I wondered, have you ever been on the International Union of Local Authorities website?
No.
Oh, you better go there. Just type in to Google IULA, and you will be absolutely shocked. And you will. This is the International Union of Local Authorities, Municipal International Cooperation. And this is where the UN types and all the little other groups are in direct contact with our local officials in the municipalities. I can read a little bit from here. It says, the International Union of Local Authorities, a democratically accountable body representing the interests of local governments and their national associations in all regions of the world, exists to promote the strengthening of democratic local government. Whenever I see the word democratic, I get sick because we know that, you know what that means.
Sure.
Then it goes on. The world.
I've said it the best. The more democracy, the more socialism.
That's right.
We're going to be right back here at Freedom 21. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show with our special guest, Charlotte Iserbeet, and we're discussing regionalism and how it is influencing the political landscape here in the United States.
Okay, Michael. So I'm sure that I hope people got in on the first part of that. International Union of Local Authorities. I'll read it over. A democratically accountable body representing the interests of local governments. Did you know, you guys there at the local level, that your local government was being influenced by the International Union? Okay. And their national associations in all regions of the world. It exists to promote the strengthening of democratic local government. Thank you. The Worldwide Declaration of Local Self-Government, published by IULA, sets out the fundamental principles of democratic local government systems. Underpinning the series of international summits begun at the 1992 UN Conference on Environment and Development in Rio de Janeiro.
That's sustainable development.
Yep, that's right. And culminating with the 1996 UN Cities Summit, Habitat 2 in Istanbul, the 32nd IULA World Congress organized in The Hague in September 1995 challenged local government organizations worldwide to play their part in piloting new decentralized, you know what that means, approaches to the promotion of democracy and development, a local way to innovation and international cooperation. This challenge has been taken up by the IULA Platform for Capacity and Institution Building and by associated organizations of the IULA network. And this paper is really important, so go in there. I'm not going to read any more. It takes up too much time, but it's quite important. I've had my eye on these characters for a while. And it was shocking to me in the beginning that our local government, our little town of city of Bath, I know we've been sending town managers and people abroad on exchanges and everything, and this is what it probably is, like our police going to the Soviet Union, the Soviet police coming over to the United States. That was 15 years ago, huh? And if people have got to wake up and ask themselves, is this really what we want? Well, why are we exchanging our incredible system of government, our representative form of government, for this mess of pottage? I mean, this is going to be, as you said, right, the most extraordinarily evil dictatorship that ever happened. Because it's bad enough without technology. But with the technology, we're going to have had it. And I would just like to point out that in 1936, if anybody has any questions about the fact that this is the international socialist system, region by region, that Stalin explained it very clearly. And he discussed the three-stage plan at the 1936 Communist International, and the official program then proclaimed, quote, dictatorship can be established only by a victory of socialism in different countries or groups of countries, after which there would be federal unions, like NAFTA, GATT, like the northern, our hemisphere now that Bush is putting in, right?
Or like the European Union.
Yes, European Union, which is modeled on the European Union, yeah. Federal unions of the various groupings of all these socialist countries. And the third stage would be an amalgamation of these regional federal unions into a world union of socialist nations.
Dictatorship.
Yep, that's Stalin speaking. So he knew very well. Then, of course, Gorbachev, he does tell us the truth. He really does. He's a total, you know, admitted communist. And he pointed out in 2002 in London, I believe, that the European Union is a new European Soviet. And that means that what President Bush is putting in here, in this hemisphere, is the new American Soviet, because all of the regions are modeled on the European Union. So all these people who think that President Bush is a wonderful, patriotic, sovereignty-loving Christian conservative, they better wake up.
Yeah, and without too much time left, it's definitely time that we begin to wake up. You know, you talk about the International Union of Local Authorities. Here in Santa Cruz, the city and the county are involved in the ICLEI. It's the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. That's a Canadian NGO that's running the policies, that's setting the agenda for Santa Cruz. And some of us were at a meeting last night of a water board called an integrated water meeting, where they're going to begin to consolidate water districts and create this regional water authority. I know the district director designs a three county wide water system, so that the controls can be put in, and our water system can become part of Gail Norton's 2025 water plan, which is to have the federal government as a partner in all water systems throughout the U.S. Well, we're a little bit ahead of the curve here in Santa Cruz, but we're members of the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, and yet the public doesn't understand that. And the mayor of Santa Cruz, a man named Mike Rockin, who just returned a couple months ago from a meeting in Utah where it was the ICLEI meeting for mayors with Al Gore speaking. A press blackout was announced by the Associated Press while they discussed how it is they can regionalize for sustainable development in. So, you know, these programs are everywhere. Charlotte, we have a caller on the line, Mike from Santa Cruz. Mike?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. What question do you have?
Oh, great show, and I'd like to say hello to Charlotte.
Hi.
I had the call from about 10 minutes ago when y'all were talking about the 1798 Robeson quote and how all must be united as one and patriotism must go. The underlying philosophy is what I'm always reaching for. And in this case, with Freemasonry and with our neo-paganism, otherwise known as the New Age movement, the cornerstone for these, groups,
Masons
and New Ages, the cornerstone of it all is Hermetic philosophy, especially the Emerald Tablet, which anybody can find on the internet. It's a very short read. Usually it's about a page or a page and a half, and it has variously 12 or 14 points. One point in particular is one which most people have heard at some point or another. Could I just read two sentences?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You'll see the reflection of this philosophy in our modern political movements that you guys are right now talking about. Mm-hmm. It goes like this. That which is below corresponds to that which is above, and that which is above corresponds to that which is below, in the accomplishment of the miracle of one thing, and just as all things have come from one through the mediation of one, so all things follow from this one thing in the same way. The key phrase is, as above, so below. And since there is this idea they have of the universal mind or the universal consciousness, mm-hmm. or any of those kinds of ideas that most of us are familiar with, they say that what happens on the earth must be a reflection of that, and right now that idea is shattered in little pieces, taking the form of states and nations and cities and patriotistic attitudes and all those sorts of things. So our problem is our lack of spiritual development, and certain individuals cannot or will not go along with the philosophies of Hermes, and so they'll have to be changed or killed. And of course, killing people who won't go along wouldn't be too much of a problem for those people, because mostly they believe in reincarnation, and so they're doing us a favor by killing us, because hopefully we'll come back in a better form, and then we can all live as one. Isn't that sweet?
Well, you know, the on top to below, it sounds to me like the policies coming out of a local resource conservation district, an arm of the federal government that is here to say themselves that they're non-regulatory. But if you go along, be a collaborator with respect to the management of your land and give authority as to that management over to the central authority, you too can be part of the one, part of the team in Santa Cruz that will survive over all else who will be required to go along. Thank you for your call, Mike. Do you have any comment, Charlotte?
No, simply that he has a very good understanding of the role of the secret societies and the occult and Alice Bailey and the whole New Age philosophy, which certainly is totally contrary to Christianity. It's totally, that's what's taking over now. If you look at any of the European Union documents on religion, that's what you see. It's exactly what he's talking about. You've got to get rid of Christianity, and that's the New Age philosophy. That's their position. It's got to go. And it's going, because the churches are helping. The churches are absolutely on board. They've been completely infiltrated, regardless of what church you're talking about. They've all been infiltrated, and to a very severe extent. And so we're in major trouble.
Well, that's not an encouraging word. But let's get a little deeper into the issue of regionalism. On your website, AmericanDeception.com, you have a series of essays written in the 70s by a man named Don Bell.
Oh, what a wonderful man.
Wow, what writings. It's we have them. If you go to our website and go to the radio page, you'll find links to this and more on Charlotte's website that gives you a good understanding and background of the rise of regionalism in this country. But what caught my eye was this concept of PBBS.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And that, again, is Reagan, right?
Yeah.
And,
tell us about that.
Teachers fought that. Well, and there's some good stuff in my book on that. And by the way, folks, the Deliberate Dumbing Down of America is now a free download. So if you're on the computer, you can download it free. And all of these things you can look up. I'm finding which is great. The book is selling better than ever because I gave it a free download. I think people get into it and then they get tired of looking at the screen and they say, oh heck, I'll pay. You know, I'll buy the book. But PPBS is the system. It's the international system. It actually is total quality management. I did ask the IBM representative at a big conference in Minnesota about 10 years ago on total quality management. I said to her, this sounds a lot like PPBS, planning, programming, budgeting, management system, or management by objectives. And she said, oh yes, she says it really is, but it's just a more sophisticated version. So if anybody thinks that PPBS went away, it didn't. It started out in the, I think Robert McNamara in the Defense Department. Well, first of all, I think he was at General Motors or wherever he was, and then he went to Defense Department and put it in. And then it went from there to probably the Rand Corporation, and then it jumped into the California government. I may be wrong here. I'm not looking at anything to document what I'm saying on the show, but I believe that's pretty much the way it arrived in California. And I think Assemblyman Burke, he was a great patriot that you had out there at the time, he fought hard against this, and the teachers union fought hard against it, and they really, but there were so many CFR type, Council on Foreign Relations type, internationalist traders, regional government types, working to get it in with the semantic deception and all, that they did manage to get the planning process in. In brief, what happens is the goals are set, in private, you know, in the ivory towers, the goals for your family's future and mine and for our country are set in private meetings, ivory tower type meetings or up on Rockefeller Center. And then we're made at the local level. I don't have to tell you all there in Santa Cruz that you know the little task forces and all, we're told that we're involved in setting these goals, and we're not. They put us through the mill, the politics of change, the Delphi technique, the group process, all of this is, I could go into great detail on that, but I think many of you do understand that this has been an enormous agenda, the agenda of change and the change agents, how to bring us, all of us, to a changed position on whatever, on the environment or education or whatever, religion. And so that is all very much a part of PPBS. They get us in the little, you know, little groups and all, and finally through the Delphi technique, they come to a conclusion that they're going to do something about the watershed and wherever, you know, and everybody's in agreement, but there's absolutely been no vote by anybody, and that's the task force. They stamp it with a goal, a big star, and it goes to the governor, and that's it. Well, PPBS basically was put into effect in every branch of government. But I'm more familiar with the branch education. And it was the goal setting, and various states were involved, especially Oregon, in developing the goals, which were, I got a hold of the whole goals collection about 20 years ago, and those goals went out across the country into every single state. And as all of us know, we were told at the local level we were developing our own goals. No, we weren't. And the funding, because it's planning, programming, budgeting, management system, the funding goes along with the goals. The whole thing is very carefully planned to come to arrive at a certain result. They call it, well, it's results based, right? We're talking about outcomes based, performance based, results based. All of this is planning, programming, budgeting, management systems.
It's all how to get to a desired outcome.
For a desired outcome.
Whether it's water planning or land use planning or education planning.
Exactly. And anything that deviates from that is thrown in the garbage. And anyone who deviates from it is pretty much thrown in the garbage, too, or identified in the community as old-fashioned or kook or whatever. And it's a system. Very difficult to break it at any point. It's like a chain. And that's why when you go up against it, you really never succeed in getting rid of it. Because you might be able to, like a worm, you know, you can kill the worm, but the parts are still alive, and they get back together again.
Let me give an example locally, and people around the country can see this. They need to be able to see this happening in their own community. But here in Santa Cruz, we had the feds come out and coordinate with the fire marshals and the planning department and the insurance industry and the Sierra Club and the Native Plant Society, et cetera, to create a habitat conservation plan countywide that would have controlled everything that you do on your land. And, well, we beat that down. I mean, there were a couple of us that went to those meetings with 50 stakeholders. We acted as citizens, refusing to call ourselves stakeholders, and just pointed the ludicrousness of this program. Well, we beat it down, and that caused a great backlash. And so what happened was they regrouped, and they came in with 5 new programs to achieve the same thing from different perspectives. And now the people in the San Lorenzo Valley have a habitat conservation plan that will be used to control the use of their land. They didn't get it countywide yet, but the point that you're making is that you can kill the worm, but it comes back into its little pieces.
Oh, yes. It's a very diabolical system, and so much has been written on it. So many people have worked on this, been absolute experts. I mean, Don Bell was one, Maureen Heaton, whose book is on myamericandeception.com as well. I think of Arch Roberts, Colonel Arch Roberts. He did magnificent work on this for many, many years. Jo Hinman, she was out of California, I believe. She was probably the major player right from the beginning. There has been so much opposition to regionalism. But the people just never were able to get their arms around it. It just was so pervasive, and Richard Nixon, of course, he was the one that carved the country up into 10 regions. And I often think of, there's a really good quote here, and I don't know where I got it, but I know it's true. Our Senator Muskie from Maine, he was our senator, he died about 15 years ago, I guess, but in the 70s when Nixon carved the country in 10 regions, Muskie made the comment that, because we called him Mr. Metro, he was really big into regionalism, Edmund Muskie from Maine, and he made the comment that when the Democrats couldn't get something like metropolitan government approved in the Congress or whatever, of course it was never really approved by the Congress, it was such a sneaky way they got this in with the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations and everything, but he said when they couldn't get what they wanted, they'd go to the Republicans. And that was a perfect case of just like now with Bush. I mean, I don't like John Kerry, but I would have much preferred to have John Kerry in, because then we would have had some opposition.
There'd be a mobilization.
From the conservatives, so-called conservatives. I mean, they let Bush do anything he wants, but had Kerry been doing what Bush is doing now, they'd be raising Cain.
Sure. No Child Left Behind wouldn't have had a chance with the president named Kerry.
Right. Everybody would have been up in arms about it, and everything else you're talking about tonight. You see, the Republicans are really, they're pretty smart. They've got themselves it's sort of an aura, like, you know, like they're saints. You know, when they get into the White House, nobody dares touch them.
And yet,
even the media.
And yet, as a prior guest, Terry Hayfield, has pointed out, and we've repeated several times, the Republicans are charter members of the International Democrat Union. That's IDU.org. And the IDU is committed to the establishment of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the UN dynamic, which is entirely contrary to the principles of the U.S. Declaration of Independence. But when we talk about this PPBS, planning...
Programming, budgeting, management system,
Let me quote from Don Bell how he says it works. He says, quote, "It works like this. Big Brother says, I have made the plans. You must set up your program so that it will help fulfill my goals and objectives. Then I will set up a budget for the operation of your program using revenue-sharing plan to finance it. By means of the revenue-sharing plan, I took all of your money, so that you'd be forced to operate your program under my budget and in accordance with the goals and objectives of my plan."
Great.
Now, he says that's PBBS in a nutshell. We certainly see that happening all around the country today.
Sounds like BS to me.
We'll be right back at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Well, we're wrapping up this first hour of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, and we have Carol on the phone from Arkansas. Carol. Hello.
Greetings, and it's been a long time since I was able to chat with Charlotte. It's good to hear you, Charlotte.
Hello, Carol.
And thank you for keeping on, keeping on.
Yeah, well, I hang in. You all hang in, too.
Well, bless you. I just wanted to say amen to what you're saying. Rick Warren, the so-called father of the purpose-driven church movement, which is moving into the world church, was just in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum, and I wondered if you all caught Larry King live right after the Katrina fiasco. Larry King had Dr. Phil on the psychological end of it, and he had Rick Warren, and then there was some government wonk on there. But one of the statements that Rick Warren made just so confirmed how bad this whole purpose-driven church movement thing is, and confirm the fact that it is drawing the people into a religious movement that will make it, you know, it's one of the legs of the global thing that they have to control, and that's the religious aspect of it. But he made the comment on that program that night that what we really need was more public-private partnerships.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right that the religious aspect of it parallels every bit of it in control, because Peter Drucker was one of the persons who did the TQM movement, you know. He's a humanist. Well, he also was the one who helped Rick Warren to put this whole purpose-driven church thing together. And it is all about Delphi and Hegelian dialectics and manipulating people in by groups. And they also call the ones they run off that they don't want, and I'm asking anybody, is that a Christian attitude to run off people? But anyway, they call them blessed subtractions. You know, just let the old ones who refuse to evolve and come around to this new way of thinking, let them go, just because we'll replace them.
Right.
I mean, that's their church attitude. It's
I think that what you're talking about is so important, and you know, Mike, people, you should be getting some people on your show who are savvy on this. Rick Warren, the purpose-driven church, it's diabolical, and I've been following it just recently. Sarah Leslie is an expert on it, has written on it. She's the publisher of my book, and I just recently heard that they're moving into Africa, Rick Warren and the whole crowd, and they're getting in. They're trying to manipulate the pastors. It's very serious.
Yeah, excuse me, ladies.
Very serious business going on there with Rick Warren. People should go check on their internet. You know, get in there and find out what he's all about and the purpose-driven church.
Part of the New World Order.
It is. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you for calling, Carol. Well, Charlotte, it certainly is important that people understand what regionalism is, why it undermines a limited government in the form of representative democracy that America was built upon. And that they know that it's not just globalizing on a global basis and on a national basis, but it's right down to your water districts and fire districts
yep.
that are globalizing themselves. Here in California, Schwarzenegger has called for the elimination of counties. He set up the 22-county Sierra Conservancy, which crosses over into Nevada and up into Oregon. It's about the fire districts and the water districts in your county that are working to consolidate together and consolidate with districts outside your own county. That's certainly happening here in Santa Cruz. So you need to first understand how it destroys a free society, and secondly, you need to recognize it happening in your own community. But then what do we do? Once we know what it is and how it's happening, what do we do next?
Well, I think the education end of it is terribly important, and that's really all that we can do. I mean, we don't have any money. Nobody's funding us. But we do have the internet. We do have great groups like yours, and we can only do what we can do. And I'm just grateful to all the groups out there that are working the way they are. And you were just talking about doing away with local government. I'm just looking at this thing right now. I know we've got to end the program, but. This is Governor Weld, you probably knew that, in Massachusetts, signs a law ending all county government.
And that's already happened in Massachusetts,
yeah,
huh?
Yesterday, this is 1997, he signed into law a historic bill to abolish county government in Massachusetts. And this is disgusting. He says, over the last three centuries, counties have become obsolete, inward-looking bureaucracies with dozens of departments and department heads that serve themselves and not the taxpayer, Weld said. The legislation we're signing today is a good first step in eliminating a vestige of Massachusetts colonial government. And then he talks about his own family, and he says, quote, county government has been around Massachusetts as long as the Weld family. But while great-great-grandfather Weld's hunting jacket has not yet lost its usefulness, counties, I'm sorry to say, have. How about it? I mean, that's Governor Weld, and that's Massachusetts. So that's what we're looking at, and that's what the guy who was talking, I mentioned in the Communist Daily World, the writer of that article, when he said we weren't moving fast enough. Well, we're moving fast enough now.
Yeah, we clearly are, and it comes from Democrats, it comes from Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
We like to say that America has a one-party system with two divisions.
Exactly.
Well, I think there's an awakening occurring. These were issues that 10 years ago were only in the back of my mind, and I know so many people who are beginning to face the reality, as you did back in the 80s when you were working in the Reagan administration, as you described earlier tonight. And all we can do is help people be able to face that reality and swallow that tough pill, and move America along. And Charlotte, for all that you've done for all these years and all the research, I really recommend to the listeners that they go to your websites. People can find your websites by going to our radio page. They link to both of them. And we look forward to having you back again. And in fact, in this next hour, it'll be Charlotte Isabeat on education, pre-recorded show. And if you've gained value out of this hour, you'll gain value out of next hour as well. So stay tuned for the second hour of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. And next week, Erica Carl will return, and we'll talk about sociology as a religion.
What a gem.
Yes. All this ties together.
Yep.
And we look forward to sharing next Wednesday evening with you, and look forward to this next hour. And thanks again, Charlotte.
Thank you very much, Michael. Best to all your audience.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, good evening, Roy. This is Michael Shaw with my co-host, Roy Avila, the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. And good evening to America tonight. You know, here in Santa Cruz, we had one of those California Central Coastal days. It was in the 80s, and you could see forever. And
don't make people mad at us now.
Well, you know, the Earth is a beautiful place, and certainly Santa Cruz is one tremendously beautiful place.
If they would just let it be beautiful.
Well, you know, if people and the earth were free to engage without restrictive dynamics being thrust upon us by the agent of force at every turn and increasing, and of course that's our show's focus here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz show, how our nation is being changed right out from under our nose. And there is a reason and a rhyme to why all of that's happening, and we're going to continue with that subject tonight in our special edition entitled Sociology is a Religion with returning guest Erica Carl. But before we move on to our show, I want to make a couple corrections to the start of the last week's first hour show. In it, I described the Monterey National Bay Sanctuary as including 7,000 acres of land. And I was a little confused at the moment, but I wanted to be conservative. In reality, the enforcement divisions that operate under the Monterey Bay Sanctuary have a coverage of land of 7,000 square miles. That's a huge hunk of California. And of course, last week we talked about the Sierra Conservancy as an example of the regionalization that's going on, which takes up 21 counties in the state of California. But I made a mistake there also. I talked about the Sierra Conservancy as expanding into Nevada and Oregon, and I was incorrect about that. It is the Sierra Business Council that takes up the regional affiliation that cuts across into Nevada and up into the so-called province of Klamath, which extends on into the state of Oregon. So it is the Sierra Business Council, the public-private partnership arm of the Sierra Conservancy, that has that regional affiliation. So with those clarifications, I want to make another reflection also on our recent visit up to Tuolumne County, where Daniel Beckett made a keynote speech to the TuCare organization up there. And it's just nice to know that here and there and more places, there are good people fighting both inside and outside government to rise up and bring out this truth. So do the same. Rise up yourself. Do your part. Participate in freedom. And of course, we've got a lot of tools at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz that can help you spread that word. Just check into our website, f21sc.net. And we may get a chance to talk later in the show about the formation of this region's integrated water plan and some interesting mayoral actions, etc., in connection with that. But let's move right along and get to our subject today, which just ties into everything that is so much falling apart in our society and our political system. Tonight our guest is a writer and a researcher. She is known for her book, Give Us the Young, and I'm particularly fond of the Wisconsin Report work that she did five and 10 years ago. We'll be right back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz with our special guest, Erica Carl. We're back at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. Erica, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you?
Well, I'm just wonderful. I Thank you so much for being up late on the East Coast to share what's an early warm evening here in the Central Coast of California, from one side to the other, one beautiful nation in between. Well, tell us, Erica, our topic tonight is sociology is a religion. For our audience, we've had a series of broadcasts on reflecting on Auguste Comte, his philosophy of positivism, and his religion of humanity. Comte is the father of sociology. He directed his followers and later generations to implement, I think you've identified 14 points in order to establish central world domination and a one-world religion.
He had big plans.
He had big plans. And
I think that people should realize it didn't matter to him that it wasn't going to take place in his lifetime. He expected it to take maybe 200 years to finally complete what he had started out. And he had an idea that he had sort of a bond with the future, because his plans would be followed out and people would be living according to what he had decided.
Well, do you think if he were alive today, he'd reflect on the progress from his perspective over 200 years and feel that things were as he hoped or expected them to be?
I think he'd feel it's a little late, like it's taking longer than he thought.
And would that make him nervous?
Would that make him nervous?
Yes.
Well, he was a brilliant man, and say if he were alive, he probably would concoct a lot of things to make things happen. I think that while it isn't as far complete as he would have liked it to be, it's a lot more complete than maybe 90% of the people realize what's going on.
Well, I think that's certainly true, and of course I know your work for a long time, and mine during this decade anyway has been really dedicated to help spread that information, because more and more people are becoming aware that there's an integrated program here that accounts for what is wrong in our political economic situation and our social and cultural dynamics.
Well, the way people are reacting to this, and have been in past years particularly, I am reminded of an apartment I lived in. It was a four-family affair, and the manager or the owner came in and told me about the newlywed couple that lived across from me.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Erica. We'll
sure.
be right back with the rest of our audiences. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show with special guest Erica Carl. And while some stations were gone, Erica talked about how Auguste Comte would have expected his plan to be in place in the 200 years since he began assembling that program. And that if he were here today, she thought that he might think that it was running behind schedule.
Well, he'd be a lot happier with his plan than I am.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think he'd have more to be gleeful of than those who want to protect the strengths of liberty. And, you know, we have more to worry about.
Do I have time to get back to my little newlywed couple?
Yes. Let's.
Okay. The manager came in and he said he couldn't believe it. He went into their apartment and their toilet had overflowed. And he had a mop and a bucket, and he was dumping the bucket into the bathtub. And she had a mop, and she was crying and crying and sobbing. And the strange part of it is they were mopping and sobbing and mopping and sobbing, and neither one of them thought to shut off the water. And to me, that's about the way people are with sociology. They complain about this is wrong, that is wrong, everything's wrong, but they're not shutting off the sociology. They're manufacturing little sociologists by the thousands every year and training children in sociology by the millions. And unless you shut off the flood of people who are coming into sociology or being trained by sociology, there's no way we can stop any of these other things.
Well, define for us sociology.
Well, Comte defined it as the science of society. And I think you can almost define it by the goals. The goal is to take over the each individual nature and rally all the separate individuals to the same thing.
So and eliminate personality and individuality.
Eliminate personality, and also everything, all people are to be affected by the environment, by the outside. They're not supposed to have inner thoughts, conscience within them. What they are allowed to do is be affected by the outside world, but not contribute their inner feelings to that.
So give me an example of how that would relate
to what's going on?
Yeah.
Well, I think one example is how I could go back to last night. I was very much irritated listening to O'Reilly. I think it was last night or the night before. And he was talking about the fact that so many black children were born out of wedlock. And he said, nobody knows why. You can't figure it out. Well, it's not that hard to figure out, because you're training children that they have their own moral code. And it's been over the years that they brought children up and said the highest state is when you develop your own moral code. Well, that's just like saying doing anything you want.
Do it thou willst.
And do it. And these little children are not told, don't do this, don't do that, which is a protection for them. They're just turned out loose with no instruction whatsoever. It's like going at life, but no help. How do you do it?
And you attribute
Well, that's what they teach them in school, yes.
Okay, the sociologists in school end up inflicting a child with that belief structure.
It's taking away all his defense about being safe or doing things wrong or doing things that are stupid. You're not allowed to tell him, don't do this, don't do that. You just tell them that they have to obey the system and they have to dream up their own moral code. And they can't do it. You and I couldn't do it. We were born into a situation where we were instructed what's right and what's wrong. But if the kids don't know what's right and wrong, how are they going to figure out how to raise their own children?
And that's really the message in your Sixth Generation to Serfdom brilliant series that takes quotes from six generations of Comte and his followers, his later generation followers.
Well, you can follow what he set up right up to the present day and see what's happened using his philosophy and his sociology, and it's destroying any moral fabric that the country has. And when you look at, they were saying on O'Reilly, the black children, they took it from about 1960, about 25% of the children were born out of wedlock. But if you go farther than that, it's less than 10%. And over the years, with their sex education and their sex instruction, it's now around 75% born without parents being married. And if that doesn't have something to do with the education and with the government interference in their lives, how can you deny it?
Well, many people would argue that the sociologists have taken society to such a debased state that society now is dependent upon the direction and control of government in order to just lead a human life.
Well, everything is governed from the outside of you. We want you to do this, well, we'll give you money to do it. We want you to do this, we'll pat you on the back for doing it. And the things that government wants you to do are not the same things that are good for you. And the system, it is succeeding. I remember when I was in college, I took one sociology course, and one of the things that the students had to do was have a practical situation where they were using the sociological learning. And one thing they did was teach Sunday school in the Christian churches. And I remember thinking at the time, why would they want these people to teach Sunday school? They aren't even members of their church. But the university supplied Sunday school teachers for various churches.
My. Filled with sociologists, I assume.
Right, right. And it's hard for me to understand. There are Christian schools that teach sociology, and they teach the religion of humanity. They don't mind being called a humanitarian, but in its derivation, humanitarianism is the doctrine that denies the divinity of Christ. And
humanitarianism also calls for the unification of all the world's religions, doesn't it? Into globally.
That's right.
So even under such a system that Comte imagines, atheists who are principled individualists would be caught up into the collective catch of mandated thought behavior.
That's right. And, you know, with the sociologists, for 150 years, they've known the goal, and they've understood the goal, and they've had instructions on how to reach their goal of a total world dictatorship. In fact, Hitler's, many of his lieutenants and he were very interested in sociology and sociological instruction. They called themselves, I don't know if there's a German thing, but Comte called his people sociocrats, and the government is to be a sociocracy.
Well, certainly, the American scene approaches that. Sociologists everywhere measuring everything. I saw in some news release that now the federal government is to do massive amounts of data collection on schools, and not just academic data collection.
And there's so much money poured into sociology that it's not hard to understand why they make so much progress, because there's no limit to the amount of funding that they get and the grants that they get. And most people think it makes a big difference whether they're going to vote Democrat or Republican. Mm-hmm. But I think anybody who observes what's going on could look and they would realize that in most cases it's the left that dreams up the social programs and the social takeover and the takeover of the lives of individuals, but they can't get it passed. And generally speaking, the social legislation goes through when it's a Republican administration, and one of the reasons that it goes, the left dreams up the social legislation. The right passes it as soon as they figure out how to make a buck on it.
Well, that certainly has been the process here to keep a flagging dollar afloat. They've come up with all kinds of government-private partnership dynamics in the last 5 or 6 years.
For instance, in the grocery field, they get their food stamps because the grocery stores profit. When they have rent subsidies, they get the rent subsidies through in the Republican Party because the property owners profit. They get their medical business through because when it first started, particularly, doctors got big money for, and they didn't have to do charity work. Everything was paid for.
Yeah, there's always that ostensible purpose that lures us into this dangerous pit.
The Republicans go for it because there's money to be made. The Democrats go for it because they think they're doing wonderful for people.
And we end up with what becomes a left-right combined, and we call
it
sustainable
deal, sure.
Development. Yes.
We'll do it if you let us make some money on it.
Yes, well, that leads to the new world order, and it creates total control over human action.
And off they go.
It eliminates free enterprise and free expression, and that's the life that we're bargaining for our children as we have this religion of sociology continue to advance its control over our lives and being.
Well, when you look at the history of sociology and all the people that were affected by Comte,
hold that thought for a moment, please,
sure.
Erica.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic.
To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Do you think you're alone in recognizing that freedom is diminishing in your town and across the nation? Well, you're not alone.
Welcome back for some of our listeners to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. While some of our stations continue out for a break, we're going to continue our discussion with Erica Carl on the subject of sociology as a religion. Erica?
Yes.
Continue with where you were, and let's understand more.
I got listening to you, and I lost track of where I was.
Well, clearly you were talking about the Republicans and the Democrats.
Oh, yes. Well, I guess that's really pretty much covered, and if all of that money and all of that backing and colleges are big contributors to the sociological ideals, if that continues, there's no way out of it. We have to start thinking about getting rid of sociology, getting rid of sociologists, and not allowing the children to be trained in that kind of thing.
Well, let's start at this point. Some people are going to say, now, wait a minute, sociology is a course, and it teaches us how to understand other people and be tolerant and recognize diversities exist amongst people. What would you say to someone who argues that sociology is not religious in its nature, if they are resistant to the idea that it is?
Well, I have pages and pages and pages of quotes from Comte where he says it's a religion, so I believe him.
Okay.
Anybody, I do think that if somebody's going to work with politicians and inform them of the fact that sociology is a religion, I think they do need some of the quotes that I have. I think you've seen the ones in the Wisconsin Report. I have quite a few others that I think are significant that are organized in different ways. Some are organized according to different subjects. Some are organized according to the history, how it goes through the generations. But I think anybody who really wants to help and really wants to do it would have to read some of the quotes on Comte. And one thing I've done with some of my quotes, I wanted to send this to you, but I wasn't able to yet.
We have a break coming up in about 10 seconds.
So we'll be back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show, and Roy, we want to also talk about the Guide to Sustainable Development. We're back here with all our stations at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show, talking with our guest Erica Carl, who has described how the Comte's religion of humanity is precisely that. It is a religion. It may not have a supernatural belief, but I've seen your writings that the humanitarian priest's response to the fact that that humanitarianism is a religion is evidenced by the fact that a religion, would say the humanitarian priest, that religion consists in regulating each individual nature and in rallying all the separate individuals. Is that...
That's one of his definitions, and all of them are self-serving. He claimed for a religion so seriously that he wrote a whole book, Catechism of Religion. And the catechism of the positive religion is in the form of a dialogue between him and this woman that he was extremely fond of. I think he was in love with her. She was a little too young for him. But he imagined himself training her into the positive religion. And she calls him father, and he calls her daughter. And he is also a priest. He called himself the priest of humanity. And the discussion is very, very difficult reading, but the quotes in there would assure you that definitely sociology, the religion of humanity, and the positive philosophy are all parts of one and the same religion, and sociology is definitely a religion. I want to emphasize that particularly because religion has been kicked out of the schools as far as Christianity is concerned. And I think if somebody wants to go a little bit more on the aggressive, which I think should be done, the fact that sociology is a religion should have kept it out of the schools in the first place if religion is going to be kept out of schools.
Well, and the whole issue of religion in schools points out the fallacy of creating a government school system in the first place with compulsory attendance and compulsory curriculum. There's no way you can avoid these kinds of conflicts that allow for, oh, a powerful group to take charge of the curriculum, and that's certainly what's happened. The sociologists have charge here in California. Every class has to have a focus on an environmental issue. When you're taking math, you've got to have a focus on environmental, a sociological issue, all to satisfy
the environment, also because the sociologists want to control people through the environment. I mean, you can't do this because it's against the environment, or we're going to put you in this place and this is how you're going to have to behave. It's using the environment as a management tool is very effective, and they know that. Comte planned it that way. He was a brilliant man, you know. I read that when he wrote his volumes, and the Positive Polity is four thick, heavy volumes of about, I would say an average of about 350 pages. And it said that he committed his writing to mind and outlined what he was going to say to himself, and then he wrote it all out. You know, it was in his head, and it came out in one great big piece, each volume. He was a brilliant man, you can't deny it. And to plan something that's going to be as effective over the years as his sociology and religion of humanity have been, it takes a work of genius, but it's kind of an evil genius.
Well, when you say his work of art, I mean, this you know, this has been a work in demonic art, certainly.
You know, when he was a young man, he had so much of this in his head that he went out of his head. And he tried to commit suicide. He jumped into the Seine, but a soldier came along and rescued him.
And
sometimes I like to imagine what would have happened if the soldier had just let him go.
Interesting. You know, in your earlier appearance with us, you gave 14 points that summarize the positivist
the goals?
Objectives. Yes, the goals. They may be worth reiterating here just to show and demonstrate how the program is designed to affect all that we do and all that we can be.
Well, now, in this series of six, it's really, it took six newspapers to six different issues, and I took each of these things and put them down as his goals and then followed it through the years to see how it had affected him. So do you want me to read them?
I do. When we get back from our break here in a few seconds, and for our listeners, go to the website at freedom21santacruz.net. Information keeps growing as to what's available for you to understand what the sustainable development, Comptian-inspired takeover of America is all about. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw with Roy Avila, and we're here with Erica Carl. And Erica, you are about to give us the 14 points or goals that summarize the essence.
Well, these are ones that I picked out of comp. There may be a few more that I missed, but I'll start with number one, which was the most important: replace Christianity with positive religion. Number two was abolish monarchy. Number three, institute and expand communistic principles. Number four, limit education and establish sociological control.
That's limit education. In other words, people are to be dumbed down, in the words of Charlotte Isherbeat.
And there are quite a few quotes in the newspapers that I compiled that show how they tried to limit education or how they succeeded in limiting education.
And then establish the sociological control. That
that
gets the children acting as drones by the time they're out of high school.
And then I have a fifth one: control the environment to control mankind. Six, destroy moral authority and crush personality. Seven, control public opinion.
You know, and it wasn't very long ago that most Americans would have thought that was impossible. But it's hard for an average American looking at the scene in any objective way today and not conclude that, not likely, that public opinion is under control right now.
Absolutely. And
I mean, these jokes that you watch called cable news or network news. Just,
and I think there are enough recent quotes, too, on a lot of these. It goes through the years. And enough recent quotes for people to really recognize it when they see it.
I think so. Well, if you want to read some of these quotes, the Wisconsin reports from which...
Well, should I go through the 14 first?
Go through the rest of them, yes.
Eight, liberalize sexual attitudes and behavior. Nine, destroy the natural family and diminish the male role. 10, establish evolutionary theory and control the sciences. 11, promote global integration. 12, consolidate political power in the wealthy and the leaders of industry. 13, establish cities as humanity's centers of operation. And 14, phase out constitutional government and set up a world management system, now also called regional government or the New World Order.
Well, and you want to hear more on regionalism, check our archives. Just last week we had a good show on regionalism, and we've had others in the past. These quotes that come from Compt and from six generations following Compt right up to today are listed in issues of the Wisconsin Report, which you can get by going to our radio page tonight and sending us an email, and we'll coordinate your receipt of a copy of the Wisconsin Report.
Erica, someone had a student in school and wasn't first aware of how the sociological folks have changed what's going on in the school. How would they? What would they notice that's different?
You mean different from when they went to school?
Yeah.
Well, I think anybody who is young enough to maybe have children and maybe from the baby boom generation, I don't think those people would notice that much difference, because it's been going on since after World War II.
What are they doing with the kids in school now?
Oh, no. There are so many things. I got something here the other day. They have a new certificate program for a diversity practitioner. And they're supposed to teach diversity. Actually, what they're doing is telling children or adults, whoever is being trained for diversity, who their friendship should be and who they should like and who they should dislike.
If they're going to be compliant with the new system that requires the elimination of your personality and your ego, and with its replacement being simply this sociological spirit that does what's expected.
When I send you some more of those copies of the Six Generations to Serfdom, I'll send a few copies of one I did that I think is pretty important, because it explains a lot of things. I called it Answers, Why Children Murder. And it's too complicated to explain it just on the air quickly, and I don't want to get into something that will puzzle people, but I think you'll find that kind of an interesting issue to read.
Well, I think so, especially here in Aptos, California, where we just had a very tragic circumstance that of that nature, and so those insights could be very timely here in the town.
I would have loved to go on someplace like O'Reilly and explain some of that, but, you know, he gives you such short bites that I don't think it would be worthwhile even if I could.
Well, that's why it takes communications like this, where people can sit down. Maybe they're driving in their car. You can always get CDs from Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. And
you need a longer time.
Intelligent discussion that allows the digestion of these notions, which once you get them, they're pretty easy to pick up and recognize. But getting onto the track that recognizes the reality as opposed to the illusion, as Dr. Stan Monteith always says, is
well, there's,
the trick.
There's enough evidence and enough throughout the years that I don't think anybody should really deny that sociology is a religion, because it's right there for anybody to see.
And would you go so far as to say that there's been a conspiracy amongst sociocrats to bring about this sociological society, the political, economic, and
well, I'd say that as long as you won't tell me that a conspiracy has to be secret, because it is no secret. It's been out in the open all these years for anybody who wants to see it.
Well, and it's become very easy with the web to do just that.
Yeah. Well, with the web, and I saw it when I was in college, but I didn't understand it. And I didn't begin to understand it until I read, I think it was the 14th edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and that edition explained the whole thing about Comte in a much shorter article than his books. And from then on, it wasn't a matter of deciding whether he was promoting a religion or constructing a new religion. It was a matter of seeing how everything else fit into it. And once you accept the fact that sociology is a religion, that sociology is trying to turn everybody into a one religion group, then you begin to understand what's going on.
Well, talk about how sociology has crept in today's churches.
Well, it started in the churches. Actually, now that's kind of a disheartening thing to me, because one of the reasons that sociology got such a good start in this country was because some of the ministers at that time were impressed with Comte. There was one named Theodore Parker who was very much a follower of Comte, and there were, even in the early days in the 1840s and 1830s, when Comte was just beginning to write, there were ministers and intellectuals in the United States who were corresponding with him and who liked what he was doing. So I would say that many of the churches started going for this humanitarianism very early in the game. And I think it's, you have less to condemn modern-day preachers for, because they didn't really have the type of knowledge given to them in their training that those early ministers had.
The circle
early
had been
ministers,
broken. You're saying the circle had been broken before.
The early ministers thought they were pretty intellectual, and they liked Comte. And they promoted Comte. One of the things that helped very, very much to promote it was in the 1893, in conjunction with the World Parliament, the World's Fair in Chicago, they had a World Parliament of Religions, and they invited religions from all over the world, and the government sent out the invitations, religions from all over the world to come and talk about their different religions in Chicago. And many of the people who went to this World's Fair went to these various meetings and learned about all these other religions and were impressed by them. One of the people who was there at the World's Fair in Chicago was Annie Besant. Do you know who she is?
Yes.
She's in the theosophy. And one of the first persons who was very much impressed with Comte was Madame Blavatsky. And she patterned much of her theosophy after Comte's writings.
So it's been leveraged by some unsavory minds.
Others who went for Comte were Edward Bellamy, who wrote Looking Backward, and John Dewey, who was in the modern education at his time. Hmm. So actually it's been building up with very, very strong promoters for at least 150 years. So when you look at that, you think, well, many people today are just beginning to realize what's going on, and these people have had 150 years head start.
Well, that's why we like to say at Freedom 21, we may be way behind, but we got plenty of room to catch up. So
well, we're running fast.
Yeah, we got to keep running faster, more effectively, and I see things like that beginning to dawn around the country. In fact, Stewards of the Range, you can find them at stewardsoftherange.org. Just this last week, it circulated their petition to draw people's names for the repeal of the Endangered Species Act, such a cornerstone to the environmental movement, which is such a cornerstone to the
yes.
establishment of this new world religion.
That's
and new
important.
World government. So this is a huge step to take, one that you know, we've been harping on for some while, and you can go to stewardsoftherange.org. And sign their petition to begin the clamor for the repeal of the foundation of what's really taking America down. Which is
it's possible now to reach more people than was possible for a long, long time. I remember when I first wrote the Give Us the Young, several people called up Phil Donahue's program and said they should have me on. There's no way that would have ever happened.
That was what, 1981, right?
Or earlier.
Or earlier, okay.
I had a different title to it before.
All right. Well, you've been on this track, and it's so important to have people who are as rooted as you are in the knowledge and background and really the historical watching of the development of.
Well, I was glad to know this because it kept my children out of sociology classes. It kept them out of public schools. I wasn't going to have them in public schools. And also, all of our grandchildren have been kept away from sociology, which makes me very happy.
Oh, I'll bet it does. When I speak around the country, I have so many people come with such sad stories about their children and how they lost their children to a set of ideas, and they don't know what happened. And it's becoming clear to me that the families that can hold the line on this are families who acknowledge reality and aren't afraid of looking at this question such as the issue of whether sociology ought to be shoved down the...
And I would say you have to be pretty diligent at it too, because the more that I hear, it's every, you know, you talked about it's in the educational system, it's in the church, it's all over. So you really have to be diligent.
Well, you come up with something and tell people about it, and then they'll change the name.
That's true, but you know, I think they're moving so hard and so fast with the sustainable development, the Agenda 21 protocols, that they are so vested at this point in that concept that the exposure of sustainable development, I think, begins to topple their house of cards, because when you get inside that temple of sustainable development, you're finding the Fabians, and you're finding just a state of permanent revolution, and you're finding...
Well, and many people are personally affected by it. And all of a sudden they wake up and say, what happened? And then they want to know.
Well,
so that sustainable development is an important one, but the years from, what is it, 2005 to 2010 are the years of, it's 10 years. 10 years, I think it's 2005 to 2015, are the years of sustainable development in the schools. So while you're trying to inform people that they should watch out for sustainable development, the children in the schools, through their sociology and their social studies courses, are learning that they should promote sustainable development.
Well, I think most young people, if you talk to them today and you say, you know, in what way do you think you could make a difference in your world and your community, many of them would say, well, I'll be a social worker.
That's right. That's true. I made kind of a list of things that people might do. I would say stay out of sociology in social science classes, keep children out of those classes, encourage others to stay out of sociology.
But hang on for a minute. If no one was taking the classes, the argument might be that we wouldn't understand what's happening, and we might become more vulnerable to the sociocrat takeover.
Well, I don't think that an ordinary student in an ordinary class would catch on to what's happening to him.
Okay, I agree with you. It's just too dangerous to put a young person into this mind-bending circumstance.
If you prepare them and say, tell me what happens, tell me if this happens, tell me if that happens, have you been asked to do something that you don't think is right? Have you been asked to join a social movement? Have you been told that you're supposed to join a social movement? You have to ask children what's going on in their classes.
And that's that takes real diligence on the part of the parent. You know, so moms and dads need to recognize what's happening with their children when they drop them off, and you need to decide what's best for your child, the debunking that you need to do every day, or just keep them home
and look and check. I mean, you know, go to our website, go to these places that we do, go to the links, because it's there. It'll tell you what's happening.
I think that is a good idea is to pick up some of the materials that the children are studying.
Right, read it. Look at it.
Read the pamphlets.
A couple of calls. Are you ready to hear from a caller?
Sure.
Okay. Roger from Allentown, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hello, Roger.
Yes. Good evening, folks. Hey, I'm guessing you have probably already seen, I think it was Rose Martin was the author of the book, The Great Deceit, The Social Pseudosciences. Might be like 40 years plus old by now.
There have been a few that I think I might have read that years ago. I know I read something about social sciences, and I thought, great, you know, somebody else is on it too.
Yeah, it was really an excellent book, except for like in chapters 3 to 4 where she swallowed some evolution, there's naturalistic evolution, so she can only blame, I guess, the those folks for the racial ideas. And C.S. Lewis, I wanted to call this in a few weeks back when you had a related topic. C.S. Lewis had or borrowed, I'm not sure, this great line about referring to those of the humanist or social engineering tendency is that they worship man in the abstract, but hate him in the concrete. In other words, as they can make him, as they can make man, they worship him, perhaps as along the lines of the Nietzschean Superman. To hating him in the concrete, of course, that means as he is, with all his petty little problems and grubby dispositions and whatnot. So they just can't stand sinful man, they reject the concept, I guess. But, and then the illusion of the perfectibility of man, shaped, of course, in their image rather than that of a righteous God. And God,
and you find that very much in sociology. We have to change men. We have to change the system. We have to make changes.
Yeah, and it's really applied Marxism is what it is, with that never-ending succession of non-sequiturs in an introductory sociology text. And God bless you all.
Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And we have Ted from Georgia. Ted?
Got about a minute.
Good evening.
Yes. What is the lady's name?
Erica Carl.
I see, fine. I tuned in a little late, so I didn't get it. I certainly agree that that social sciences, as they're taught, along with psychiatry, and, is a religion.
With the social science, psychiatry has, or psychology has changed too. It used to be you want to make the child or the person healthy in mind and body, and much psychology today is how to manage other people.
Or how to get them on drugs.
Now, could I say something?
Certainly.
There's a fine line of distinction. There's some, let's put it this way, there are some things, obviously there are some things involving personalities and so forth that are very valid observation.
That's true.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here, Ted, and we'll finish the question when we do. We're back here at the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, and continue with your question, Ted, of Erica Carl.
The fact is that, as I was saying, there are many observations that a person can make about personalities, that is, general observations, that are valid. And, of course, what they do is they take these things and structure them in such a way that it fits their program. And I had an interesting experience a number of years ago. I went to an assertiveness training class taught by a very eminent and reputable psychiatrist. It was a class at a school, public school. And after the first coming in on the second session, we were waiting for the class to start for the professor to get there, who was a doctor. And the fellow next to me, who was retired, and he said, "This is a great class, isn't it?" I said, "Well, I certainly enjoyed the first session." I said, "Of course, I don't agree with the religious aspects of it." And he said, "Religious aspects?" He said, "There's no religious aspects to this class." And at that moment, the professor happened to come in, the doctor happened to come in, and he turned to him. He said, "Doctor," he said, "there are no religious aspects to this class, are there?" And the doctor just smiled, and he said, "There certainly are."
The truth bears out.
Huh? Yeah.
Yes.
So, and I'd like to know, and I think that I probably have a pretty good idea of the answer, but how do you see Freud in relation to Comte? I'm not familiar with Comte, incidentally, other than what I've heard on this program.
I see Freud more in relation to another psychology book I have read called Mental Physiology by William B. Carpenter, and it was written in the 1870s, and I learned more from that book than I learned from all my courses in college, and I think that Freud would be more on the Comte side, because while Carpenter made everything very clear, Freud sort of mixed things up. He's got these id and ego and superego, and I don't really know what they are. Carpenter talked about unconscious cerebration, meaning thinking. Unconscious cerebration would be, an example would be, you go to sleep and you have a problem on your mind, and you wake up in the morning and you haven't been actively thinking about it, but all of a sudden the answer to the problem comes to your mind. And he would call that unconscious cerebration, like a clerk has been at work in your mind, filing things away and getting things organized. When you wake up in the morning, all of a sudden things become clear.
That sounds like a very valid theory.
Is what?
I say that to me sounds as though it's a valid theory.
Well,
in other words,
it's a wonderful book. If you could, of course, it's something you have to pick up on the internet.
Yeah,
and it's called Mental Physiology by William B. Carpenter.
All right,
and I can't tell you how much I learned from that. It's just very, very, very valid today, and I think that Freud kind of mixed things up.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling, Ted.
All right.
Well, Erica, we have a couple minutes left in our show tonight, and as we sort of wrap up this idea of Auguste Comte, positivism, his religion of humanity, how it has permeated our society through sociology and its various offshoots, leave us with something to go forward with.
Well, I think sociology is everywhere in our lives. It's everywhere in education. Comte had to start with a little bit and move on and grow and grow and grow. And I think that one of the most important things I would urge people to do is get their children out of sociology and do what they can to get sociology out of the schools and to encourage children who have an elective choice not to get into sociology. Actually, you know, social workers, a lot of them do pretty good work, but there's no reason why they have to take sociology in order to do the work they do.
Well, just so they can indoctrinate the people who they're working for.
Well, it indoctrinates the people, but if you're going to help people and do an efficient job of it, there's no reason why you should have to take sociology.
No reason to be indoctrinated.
No, there's no reason. And I think that one of the things that you should be able to do is point out to Christians that when they support sociology, they're betraying Christ.
Boy, I guess that that should sum it up for a whole lot of American people.
And teaching sociology in public schools is teaching religion, because it is a religion, and it is the teaching of religion.
Well, and it's remarkable that it is the sociologists that oftentimes are found crying the loudest for
religion out of the schools. That's right. They're the ones. And, of course, they're doing that because they want to have just one religion. And the strongest one, the one that's most dangerous to them, is Christianity, because there's a right and a wrong in Christianity. There's a right and a wrong in many other religions, but the right and wrong in Christianity is a knowledge within you that you learn the proper way to behave. And sociologists don't like this.
Well, the essence, it seems to me, too, of true Christianity is that Christianity stands against the totalitarian world. And so when you look at the attack on Christianity and ask why, and if you are to find that the answer is to further the objectives of the religion of humanity, then I'd say we all ought to get real nervous, because the religion of humanity will be run on top by men who do not have ordinary man's interests.
Now, a sociological religion can justify a lie, but the Christian religion can't justify lies.
Well, thank you, Erica Carl. Our time is up, and I'll look forward to reading more and talking more with you and spreading the word that you've done so well.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Erica, and have a good evening. And
thank you.
And good night. And,
good night.
Listeners of Freedom 21, check into our website. If you do not have your copy of the Sustainable Development Agenda, A Guide for Public Officials, order it. Now, participate.